Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Mark, how are you doing?
Well, actually, we were just talking. I'm a little bit tired today. I did get up with the kids, but other than that, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, we were just laughing because I like looked at the camera. I was like, I look tired. I am tired. That's just how it goes.
That's kind of the reality with the lockdown and having kids. A lot of little kids. It's just you're going to be tired some days. I know you have really young kids still as well, but how old is your youngest now? I can't remember.
Yeah, so Faith is 3.5 months.
Oh,
but she's quicker than nine.
For some reason, yeah. I was forgetting that you just had a child not too long ago.
Yeah. So she's sleeping through the night. I don't know why I'm so tired. It's probably just because I'm running a million miles an hour trying to keep everyone going like during this whole quarantine stuff, but hopefully things start improving soon. Yeah. All right. Well, today we're going to be talking about how to end stonewalling and connect. And I'm really excited to talk about this one. It's been a challenge in my own marriage and something that Ben and I worked a lot on. In fact, we just had a conversation this morning. It's really early here in Colorado. It's only 8 a.m. So we already had a pretty good conversation considering how early in the morning it is. And so I'm just really excited to share with you some of the principles that we found that help if you're in this kind of situation, you know, if your spouse is shutting you out, if they're refusing to communicate, connect with you, then this podcast is definitely going to be for you. It's something that we deal with a lot here, right, Mark?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I can't think of too many couples that don't at least hit this, at least at some point within their marriage.
Right. But before we get to that, we're going to share our client win of the week. And this one comes from Joe. Joe says, big win, our first date since we separated after Christmas. And now as we're recording this, we're here in May. Yeah, early May, mid-May, whatever. And he says, it was a win. I still have a long way to rebuild her trust, but I'm working the program, trying to be patient. It's hard when physical touch is my love language. And I would agree, absolutely. And make some changes to me as well as the relationship. So huge win there to be able to go on your first date since you separated in Christmas, after Christmas, not in Christmas. Oh my goodness. Hopefully I can be somewhat articulate today with my sleep deprivation. All right. So anyway, huge, huge win, Joe, keep up the good work. And yeah, just keep going through the program. And something about you, you mentioned there with, you know, physical touch being your love language. Sometimes we see that we have to give a little more at the beginning of restoring a relationship and put our own needs on the back burner while still trying to get your own needs met as much as you can, right? But if physical touch with your partner is like your love language, sometimes you have to wait a while for that to be brought back into balance. So just keep being consistent and staying with the process. You know, we just interviewed Scott a few weeks ago, and he was sharing how he went through that himself. And so, you know, that's a great podcast if you haven't had a chance to listen to that one. All right, so let's just jump right in. So Mark, we always want to get clarity on what things are so that we're talking about the same thing, right? Because oftentimes in relationships, we might have different interpretations of what different words mean or different meanings. So let's get clarity right off the bat on what stonewalling actually is according to us.
Yeah, so stonewalling is really a pattern of communication where someone is refusing to speak or give far less interaction than would be expected. Now, this is different than, you know, not having a talkative spouse. This I would say that stonewalling is much more, it's almost purposeful. Like you can tell, like the person is trying not to give too many answers or not opening up very much. This might look like, you know, as some examples here. You might be actually trying to talk about a specific problem that's difficult, and you can see your partner is, you know, not wanting to give the answers. They're saying, they might say, I don't want to talk about that. Or they might, just give very brief one-word answers. Once again, this is even still a little bit different than, you know, a partner who's just simply shutting down, is uncomfortable. But it can look very similar. Other examples, you might be trying to talk to your spouse and they just give you simple one-word answers. You might ask them how their day is going and they say, fine, or it's okay. You know, a lot of times, when you get those very brief answers, you can tell something's off, usually with that tone, that harsh tone, or the maybe even that dejected kind of defeated tone. But you can tell that something is off, that they're not likely to communicate, especially if you're paying attention to something like this.
So when I hear the word stonewalling, I always think of a video game my husband and I used to play. In fact, I'd love to play it again. Just got to find some time, I guess, make it a priority. But where you put up, it's like a medieval game, right, where you build your castle and your fortresses. And the best defense that you can build is a stone wall, right? And then when your partner, the person that you're playing, has a stone wall built, it's so challenging to get through. You have to bring your catapults and try to knock down this massive stone wall. And I think about that, like, emotionally, sometimes it feels like this stone wall is so strong, it can't come down. Like, I don't know what to do. I can't get through it. I'm bringing all my weapons and they're not getting through. Not like we're fighting our marriage. That's not what we're condoning, but I'm trying to use an analogy here. how do I get through to this person? How do I break down this massive stone wall, right? Stonewalling. And so.
What you said is important here. I mean, you're right. It's this huge problem. Respected within our circles is, of course, John Gottman. John Gottman talks about how stonewalling is one of those four horsemen of divorce. One of the things that will very, very likely cause a big breach in the relationship if it's not taken care of. And it can seem really daunting at times.
Right. And we actually got this as a request from members of our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. I had reached out to you guys and asked what you wanted to hear about. We've kind of addressed in a couple different angles with, like, how to overcome emotional distancing and stuff like that. So how is emotional distancing different than stonewalling? Because a lot of people are asking for help with this exact issue. So we want to make sure that we give, like, the solutions to what people are actually experiencing right now.
I almost feel like emotional distancing, there's a slight difference in that it's less active resistance, and it's more like apathy. It's a more of like a natural pulling away. Like, I don't care to engage with this other person. And stonewalling feels very much like, okay, there's this active defense up. Like, whereas emotional distancing, if there's some interest, if there's something nice going on, there might be some chance of, some reconnection there. But this is like, I'm putting up my defenses, I'm putting up my walls in order to protect myself. It's very much how I see stonewalling.
Yeah, so where does that, I need to protect myself, I need to withdraw so I can protect myself, where does that really come from?
Well, like, once again, the difference here, stonewalling comes from not feeling safe enough to communicate, whereas something like emotional distancing, it's not necessarily about safety, it's about a lack of connection. So stonewalling is very much about safety, and this might come from a lot of many different sources. Perhaps it's, and I see this a lot, perhaps there's a behavior learned from childhood where there's been a history of trauma, abuse, neglect, and these can all lead to a pattern of stonewalling as an adult. I mean, what happens there is the individual learns certain lessons. They say, if I open up, if I express myself, if I say things that maybe are not in line with what the other person is saying, I'm going to get shut down, or it's going to be painful, it's going to be shaming, something as bad is going to happen. So I'm going to just say, it might not be 100% you in your marriage, because oftentimes we bring our baggage into the relationship. But perhaps it is. Perhaps it is learned from something within the relationship, feeling that what will be said won't be considered or respected. Like, for instance, if there's been this big pattern of invalidation, perhaps the individual has been shut down repeatedly, or your partner has learned that speaking up won't result in anything meaningful, you know, any meaningful changes, then they can start to cope by just not speaking up at all. You know, it might come about from, you know, maybe it's you simply don't want to talk to your spouse, and as they've tried to speak up, they realize you're not going to engage with them. So maybe it's, you know, a little bit of that where they're getting back at you, or maybe it's because they've been purposely shut down. You know, essentially, though, what this boils down to, you know, the different avenues that this can come from, is there's a lesson learned that it becomes easier or simply less painful just to be quiet or to give very brief answers rather than speak up and be disappointed. It's coming from a sense of not feeling regarded, not feeling heard, not feeling respected.
I'm going to add to this, and sometimes it's not even a conscious behavior. It's not even a conscious, like, coping mechanism, right? When you talked about how it could come from early childhood through maybe trauma or abuse, or just that feeling like I put myself out there and it wasn't a good experience, so I need to protect myself and it's better for me to be quiet. It's better for me to put up walls around myself to protect myself. That may not even be a conscious thing that you or your partner are doing if it comes from so far back. It may just be the subconscious protection, like protective mechanism that's coming up. And so that can be really challenging when you're not even really aware that that's what's going on. So I'm just gonna kind of bring it home a little bit, right? And use my own marriage as an example here. This was definitely part of Ben, my husband's, coping mechanism. And I was completely opposite. My upbringing was that we acted, like pretended like everything was perfect. But then, of course, throughout the normal course of life, and my family's really, really wonderful. Like, it was a good childhood and everything, but we definitely had some less than healthy behaviors where we would eventually hurt someone, right? Someone would say or do something, but instead of addressing it, we would just kind of brush it under the rug, but then it would, like, boil up inside all of us. I don't know if it's our personalities or just the learned behavior. It's probably a combination of both. As I'm older and I can reflect on these things. And then it would be, we would get to the point where there's so much tension, it would explode into a very volatile, like super hurtful, angry situation where more damage was done. And then yet still after that big explosion, there wasn't really a lot of resolution. It would just go back to kind of sweeping things under the rug and pretending like everything was fine. Okay, so that's just a quick encapsulation of the way I thought you were supposed to handle problems, because that's all that was really modeled for me, was that when you're really upset, you just get it out there and it's ugly and it's mean, but then you can kind of go back to somewhat normal life after that. And so, you know, take my background and the way that I thought you handled problems and emotions, and then Ben's background and how he thought you handled problems and emotions, we're kind of on polar opposite ends there. And it created a lot of challenges for us in our early married years. We've been married now 14 years, and we've come a long way learning how to overcome those patterns. For me, you know, I would get, you know, he, even this morning, okay, we're talking about a very sensitive subject, something that's very highly emotionally triggered. You know, there's a lot of emotions around it, and it could be very, very challenging to handle this kind of conversations, right? So in his mind, the way to do it is to be very careful with it, take a lot of time to talk about it, have a lot of space in between talking about things, and my reaction, my response is that, no, we got to get this out. We got to talk through it. We got to get over this hard part so that then we can get to the peaceful part, right? And so going through that, every time he would try to pull away when I wanted to engage to try to get resolution, it was terrifying to me. It was so, I felt so insecure because I was like, what is he doing? This isn't how you play the game, right? This isn't how you play the game. Like, he's not engaging with me, so I must be doing something really wrong. And he was really hurt because he's like, that's not how you play the game. We don't explode at each other and make this huge, you know, volatile experience for everyone, we take our time with things. And if it's not safe, we disengage until it is safe again. So now coming to understand that it is really about that safety for Ben, like Mark, you mentioned here, is that he doesn't feel it's safe to communicate. And I was creating a situation where it truly wasn't safe to communicate and it wasn't healthy or productive to communicate in that way. We really had to work through that to understand how to slow down and listen. And we're gonna go into like what to do about it. But I just wanted to say, like, raise my hand. I'm the first one that's, I've gone through this. And inside, and I've been on my side, and I can see how it's frustrating for both partners, for sure. And it's terrifying, and it's really, really challenging.
I want to add my experience into this as well, because I'm going to, you know, even though I talk about communication, being very open, I talk about relationships every day, sometimes I struggle with this. You know, coming from a very conservative background, and I'm not going to even blame, you know, my family or my religious upbringing or anything, because I think all that was great. They, you know, the people in my life did a really great job of trying to give me a really good upbringing. But, you know, some of the things that I took away from that as a child is kind of this idea that I can't speak up about my problems because, you know, you're not supposed to have problems. You're supposed to be good. You're supposed to be this perfect sort of person, and you know, the problems should be kind of kept aside. So when I got married and there were issues that needed to be brought up, you know, I noticed like these were really heavy conversations to me, and I would get really quiet because I felt so uncomfortable. For me, it wasn't necessarily about, you know, explosiveness or anger. When I had to discuss my own faults, I would feel an immense amount of guilt or shame. And, you know, situations like that, it felt too unsafe to open up. Now, Jen and I have learned over the years to, I've had to learn to push past that a bit myself. And my wife, Jen, has had to learn to be very supportive and loving, you know, in these discussions as well. And we've created a nice, good balance. But, you know, I like your example, Heather. I mean, it's kind of giving one route how there could be stonewalling that comes about. And, you know, there's another route. There's like this resentment and anger and things bubbling up and explosiveness. And then there's also kind of like this quieter, like for me, it was about this kind of shame and guilt and like a need to feel some perfection, you know, and whatnot. So it can come from lots of different angles, but it all boils down to not feeling safe or feeling highly uncomfortable in these difficult conversations.
Yeah. So now let's go into, and I'd love to share a little bit as you go into this, like what to do about it, and then contrast like where we were before with Ben and I, and then how we've used these things ourselves so that like the conversation we had this morning, which Ben even said, you know what, several years ago, this would have been one of us would have walked away really upset. Like we would have done or said something that really hurt each other. And we're not doing that anymore. And we can see that we've come such a long way so that you can see how to do that yourself. So Mark, what are some of the first steps that we should do? And we've got some comments here as people are on with us live, which I love, you know, about like wife having an emotional affair, wife having an affair and is stonewalling their partner. How do I break down the walls that she's built up with me? What can I do? You know, she sees me as a father, not as a husband, so she refuses to talk with me. Of course, we're gonna have a huge spectrum of different challenges that people are going through. Not every single one is exactly the same, but we're going to give kind of the high level overview of what to do so that you can start to break down those walls. So Mark, what would be the first step here?
So I always like to examine these sort of things, you know. A lot of times we say, okay, my husband, my wife is doing these things and this is what's causing the problem. And I like to flip that around a little bit and say, you know, have you examined yourself just a little bit? So, you know, if your spouse is stonewalling, I think you need to start by examining yourself, asking yourself some questions. You know, perhaps you need to ask yourself, have there been times when you've disregarded or dismissed or maybe even actively shut down what your spouse has to say, especially You know, it might not, you might not realize this is happening. So a good follow-up question here is, do you feel like your discussions often result in someone being wrong or someone being right? That's very much the same sort of vein here, where someone's ideas are going to be pushed down and dismissed and invalidated. You need to ask yourself, has your spouse attempted to be open at times, even if that's in the past, only for that experience to be uncomfortable or painful or shame-inducing? This is especially true with affairs. If you're coming at your spouse and saying, you know, you're having an affair, how could you possibly do this? You're so, you know, how could you do this to me? How could you do this to our kids? And you notice that they're not talking with you. Well, it's, you know, yes, you need to address the affair, but, you know, in terms of addressing the stonewalling, a lot of that shame and guilt and discomfort is pushing those conversations down. And certainly, you know, this is beyond the what we're going to be able to discuss today, having that balance of accountability and support and love and whatnot. But what I'm going to say, just for addressing stonewalling, is a lot of that shame and discomfort is going to create stonewalling. Do your discussions result in fights or arguments? Heather, you were just talking about this. And, you know, if you're having frequent fights or arguments, just trying to discuss what's going on between the two of you, that will create stonewalling. You know, in terms of examining yourself, you might need to ask yourself, because you might say, okay, I'm doing nothing wrong. But if your spouse has really deep, open, or trusting relationships elsewhere, but they are not able to be open with you, that's a big red flag here that says, maybe I need to examine a little bit more closely what I'm doing, how I'm approaching our conversations, how I'm, you know, accepting of my spouse. Because if they're able to have these relationships elsewhere but not with you, there's probably some sort of pattern going on between the two of you. You know, the other thing is this, you know, kind of relationship of a pursuer and an avoider. And you're going to hear my kids screaming in the background here, possibly. But anyways, there's pursuer-avoider sort of relationship. And so is your spouse really sought out space only for you to be pushing and pursuing to the extent where they shut down? Once again, that is a result of them having an opinion, trying to make some choices, trying to express themselves, only for that to be dismissed. If these questions, if you're asking these questions and you're saying to yourself, you know what, I guess I am doing some of these things, well, you're going to need to rethink some of your strategies then. This is just the beginning. We're going to get into a lot more, but it looks like you want to say something, Heather.
I'm just saying, my goodness, I wish I had these questions 14 years ago. You know, I feel like I could have had so much more awareness of what I was doing. Like I mentioned earlier, for me, it wasn't even like a conscious thing. It was just that this is how I react to emotional challenges and relationship challenges. This is the pattern that I've seen my whole life. Didn't even know it was a pattern. Honestly, like we just grow up with our own perspective, right? We call it a paradigm. We see the world one way and we think everyone else sees it that way. And so I think that if we really just, I mean, Mark just like nailed it with these questions and went through them pretty quickly. But if you can go back and really listen to each and every single one of these questions, you can realize, oh, wow, you know, I am, this is for me, like this is the one I could have answered. I am pursuing him when he's wanting space and I'm denying him that space, which is then causing him to want more space, right? It's creating that pushing that's only pushing him further away. And you can go through whatever the situation is for you. And I can almost guarantee there's going to be one of them that you're like, oh, that's it. That's where I'm kind of contributing to this. It's so crucial that we have that awareness and that we recognize the patterns in us and the patterns in our spouse, and then give grace for both sides. Because like I said, I didn't realize that that wasn't normal. I thought that was normal. That's just what you do. And so it took a lot to realize, okay, yeah, I never really liked that growing up. and I would like to learn a new pattern and I don't like it now. So what else could we do about this, right? Mm-hmm. And to give my husband some grace, like that's the pattern that he grew up with. And in fact, it's still part of his processing. Like he processes emotions different than I do. He needs more space. And I've even asked him about that because I want to understand, which we'll go into, I'm sure. I can feel it coming. I want to understand him because for me, I'm like, if I've been hurt or if I'm upset about something, something's on my mind, I can't put it down. I don't know if you can raise your hand with me on that, but like it, I become obsessive about it and probably not a great way, but it's so hard for me. If there's something, if we had a tense moment or something he said or did hurt me. And like I said, this morning, we were talking about something super sensitive for both of us. And so it's very easy to become hurt. Then I have a hard time putting it down. And so my coping is that I need to talk it out and work through it so that then we can resolve it. And his is, I don't want to do or say the wrong thing because I honestly think he has a little more emotional intelligence than I do. I'm just being really honest. I think he does. And that's okay. But he's like, I don't want to do or say the wrong thing when I'm upset, when I'm angry, when I'm hurt. So I need time to process through my emotions and then come back to this when I know I can do it in a way that I'm going to feel good about. But on the other side, maybe a little less healthy side for him is that sometimes he just wants to brush it under the rug and move on, right? And so now knowing where he's coming from, I can have that perspective and give him some grace knowing that's what he needs to do. And he's doing it for him and he's doing it for me. He actually wants the good for us when he's doing it in the healthy way, right? And I also want the good for us because I'm wanting to resolve the problem, but I need to give him that space. So.
No, you're bringing up a really good point here. A lot of your theme here was you're talking about actually having some understanding, some empathy for where Ben is coming from. Now, I find this interesting because, you know, you started off, you're talking about how you started off your relationship with him thinking, okay, this is how things are, which is even further interesting because, I mean, you and Ben come from generally very similar backgrounds, as I understand it. And so we would assume, okay, I come from a similar background. This is how things are. But, you know, even if you are the, you know, of the same race, of the same culture, of the same religion, yeah. Family dynamics can make a huge difference in how, in what your values are and how you approach different situations. And so that's, you know, beyond examining yourself, the next big thing here is having that empathy or understanding. For your partner. I mean, this, you know, if you listen to our podcast, if you join some of our programs, you're going to hear that word. You're going to hear it a lot, that empathy. You know, I really think that's the key to solving a lot of problems. You know, Carl Rogers, famed psychologist Carl Rogers, he talked about, something just fell off my desk. He talked about how empathy is one of those essential conditions for a healing environment. And you know, without this, you really can't approach, you can't really bring down walls. You can't bring down the that stonewalling behavior if you don't have that empathy there. Right. You know, along with that though, there are, you know, it's kind of some subsets of this, things that you can maybe do to really extend that empathy out quite a bit. You know, if you are in the moment and you can help them to feel like, help them to feel as though their feelings are okay, whatever they may be. That was a big thing for me. You know, like I said, you know, a lot of my, when I would shut down, it was because I felt like, okay, the way I was thinking or the way I was feeling wouldn't be appropriate. I couldn't share those things. And a lot of how we got around that was being like, okay, it's okay to be sad, it's okay to feel some guilt here, it's okay to be angry and to talk about it, and no one's gonna get upset. You know, that's can be a huge thing, especially if a lot of your patterns have been around, you know, shutting down emotions or shutting down topics, shutting anything down. You have to make it okay to express some of these things. You know, and, you know, you can do this possibly even by just, you know, being interested. You know, if you're seeing that your partner is not talking. You're trying to talk about the day. You're trying to talk about, you know, how they're feeling, and they're giving you these one word answers. They're saying fine. You know, you can tell that there's something else going on there. They're not fine. They're just not feeling okay expressing those deeper emotions, those more troublesome emotions. Make those feelings okay and be actually interested in it. I do this all the time with my wife, Jen. I can see there's these moments where I can see she's in the kitchen and she's scrubbing some dishes, and I'm like, okay, something's going on here. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? She's like, I'm fine. Everything's fine, she'll say to me. And I'm like, okay. Obviously, I start asking her questions, and I act very interested, because obviously something is not going on. And we, you know, by making that okay, it makes it so much easier for her and I to be open with each other. And I was giving you some space there because it looked like you were going to say something, but it's okay.
No, I was actually reading a comment, a really good question, and I was waiting for you to finish so we could bring it home to this one. Yeah. So we're hearing a couple things, and maybe you're listening, or sorry, as you're listening to this, you're thinking or feeling this way as well. I've changed a lot the way that I think and react to situations. I've become more calm and respectful of her decisions, but again, she refuses to end the other relationship. And then a little bit like here, like I'm still calm. I become more calm and trying to give her space, but she pushes the divorce card harder. How can I subtly show safety without pushing and getting her to start talking about the relationship? Maybe I need to let her know how she feels is okay. Then so far I've only tried to guess how she feels. So let's walk through this a little bit and how we can show that empathy, make their feelings okay, whatever they are. There's a little bit of a theme here, like whatever it is, make it okay, right? Be interested in what they have to say, no matter what it is. And then let them have some space. So Mark, how would we walk through that?
Yeah, so this is, you know, of course, we've been talking about stonewalling as if the stonewalling is an isolated problem, as if there's nothing else going on, but certainly, yeah. Oh, there's so many cogs, so many pieces to this sort of machine here that is a relationship, you know, and they all kind of affect each other. So, you know, certainly when, you know, when someone is bringing up something like divorce, you know, you're trying to give them some space. And this is when that idea of divorce comes up. When you're trying to make things safe, and that's when the idea of divorce comes up. But yes, they're feeling more open to express themselves. And so, you know, what's on their mind, they're saying, okay, I need to get away. You've actually gotten around a bit that stonewall. It's just not the topic that you want to hear. That's what it sounds like. And there's going to have to be other approaches for something like that. But you know, certainly this does apply to some of these stonewalling behaviors, and it applies to, you know, if you get through the stonewall and they bring up something difficult, you still need to hear that out. And you still, you know, I would use that opportunity of openness to dig deeper. Frequently, you know, what we will tell our clients is, you know, okay, we push them towards creating some common goals. So if you say, okay, you know, I want to make things safe, I'm going to back off. And they say, okay, I want divorce. Okay, this is a great opportunity to explore that desire quite a bit deeper. Because I've said this many times, divorce is not an end goal. It's not, you don't get up in the morning and say, you know what, I'm going to work towards being divorced because that's a great thing. They might be saying that on the surface, but really most of the time they're saying they want divorce because of what it can afford them. So what I'm going to say is, you know, if this is happening, use that opportunity of openness to dig deeper and actually identify what are their goals. Why would they even want this? What are they hoping to achieve? What are they hoping to escape? That's going to give you a much better idea than the directions that you can go in. You know, so once you get around this wall, that's not the end. There's so many other things if you get past this wall And you know, we couldn't hope to cover all the different topics once you get around a wall like that today, but certainly, you know, the general advice is, okay, dig a little bit deeper now that they're being more open.
I like this. Okay. So let's bring it back to my battlefield example, right? All right. So make sure I'm understanding this correctly, Mark. Even the fact that they're saying, I want to have a divorce would mean that you've broken down part of that wall.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
I would say that, yes.
Yeah, because now it's not absolute true stonewalling. True stonewalling is the wall is up and it's not coming down. I'm not going to talk to you about anything or let you in at all. So for those that are asking these questions, like, so I'm trying to be more open, but every time I do it, it's always going down this one road. Well, celebrate the fact that at least now you have a bit of an open road, right? At least part of the wall has come down enough to have some conversation. And
yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to point out, if they keep going down that road, it means that road hasn't been addressed sufficiently enough. And, you know, if you shut that down at that point, if you say, no, we're not going to talk about divorce, or I can't handle talking about divorce, you're going to have that wall go right back up and you're going to have to get over that again.
Wow. Yeah, that is so helpful, especially going through that, right?
Yeah.
All right. So then making their feelings okay, whatever they may be, and interested in what they say, no matter what it is. You mentioned, like, when they're going to say something, it's just not what you want to hear. So how do you help our clients when it's not what they want to hear, still keep things open? Because for me, when I hear something I don't want to hear, something that's painful for me, I want to put the stone wall up in return, right? And then we're just met with one stone wall facing a stone wall. Yeah. And that's nothing, right? So how do we emotionally, from like an emotional mindset perspective of the person that's trying to get the walls to come down, kind of handle those things that we don't want to hear, right? And kind of handle those things that are really, really painful and still, I don't know, not get into our own defense mechanisms. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
I think I'm going to go back to Carl Rogers again, you know, who's talking about conditions for healing, who talked about empathy. One of those other conditions is he talks about unconditional positive regard, meaning, you know, no matter what is going on, you're viewing the other person as though they are coming from a reasonable place. They're coming from a logical place. You know, they're coming from even possibly a positive place. The reason why I mention this is, you know, you hear something hard and you hear something difficult, you put your own attention back on yourself. I'm now hurt and I'm gonna put these walls up. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to get around this, you have to have some understanding about how your partner came to this position. If your spouse is saying, I want a divorce, and you say, oh, that hurts, I'm not gonna talk about it, and you back off, you're not gonna get anywhere. But if you say, I wonder how my wife came to this point where she is considering a divorce. She must have been hurt very much herself here. She must have gone through a whole lot. She must have endured quite a lot of hardship over some time to come to this position, because this can't be easy for her. It comes back to this, you know, we talk about our big principles, our path method, and that first one, perspective, is there for a reason, because you can't get around a lot of these problems if you don't get that perspective, if you don't gain that empathy, that unconditional positive regard. I do want to go off on a slight tangent here, because I saw a comment here in the comment section. People are talking about how if they give space, if they, you know, stop pursuing, then the partner goes off and uses that space to go do more damaging behavior, possibly engage in the affair. You know, just backing off doesn't necessarily solve problems either. You just get into this, you have this big divide between the two of you. So I always talk about creating space for them to have space, but then also creating space for there to be some problem resolution. doesn't mean if you're given the space, you can't address any problems. It's more about having expectations. A lot of times when people are saying, I just need space, there's no expectations of how much space is enough, how much space is too much. There's no discussion over when can we lift some of that space, when can we actually address the problems. And I think a lot of those things need to be addressed a little bit more directly. Those expectations need to be set. But anyways, I answered some questions and then went off on a tangent, and I've kind of lost our thread at this point.
No, and that actually answers another comment. So obviously this is something that people are thinking about, and so we always want to be very helpful and applicable to what you're going through as much as we possibly can, while still helping people in the highest sense without, that's why we have our coaching, is that we can, you know, work with you individually on your exact situation and how to apply this to your situation. Because we try to give the high level overview, but the bottom line is it's going to take really specific guidance for you to get the right help that you need. So put a plug in here. That's why we have our coaching, our free consultation, and you can go to that over at highthrivecoaching.com/apply. This really applies here to this comment again of another woman whose husband is having an affair. And again, just tried to give him space, but just know, like Mark said, giving space alone doesn't actually solve the problem. You need to have a common goal. You need to have clarity about how that space serves things. So in stonewalling, we did talk about giving space when it's needed, but that's not the only step. I just want that's really clear to everyone, since a lot of you are asking about giving space and it not really working. So go back if you need to and listen to the whole process and go into our PATH method of every single step. Right now we're trying to address stonewalling alone, but obviously a lot of you are talking about affairs and trust with stonewalling going on as well. And so just knowing that as you increase that empathy, you give that grace to your partner and grace to yourself, you try to see their perspective, that's going to help to start to bring the walls down. Now, a really good question I just want to address really quick here. How do I emotionally remove myself from him and the situation, meaning an affair? So it kind of goes back to the question I had first asked Mark about how do we handle hearing those hard things without our own walls going up and then we go nowhere, right? Because that I could easily see that could happen. And honestly, I've experienced that myself. And so it's not about emotionally removing yourself from the situation. You can't, you're in the situation and you're going to have emotions. So it's not about not feeling emotions or saying that some emotions are bad or like you have to take yourself out of the situation, because let's face it, you can't, you're in it. It's more about processing through those emotions. And for me, that's been the biggest thing I've learned how to do. In addition to the questions that Mark asked about, like, how am I affecting the situation? Go back and listen to those, remember, and recognize maybe some of the patterns that are coming up from you. Maybe they came from your childhood, or maybe they've just developed in this relationship, but you can recognize where your part is in it, right? But also understanding, like, the emotional patterns that are going on that you've developed to how to cope with different situations, those limiting beliefs. I always come back to uncovering what your limiting beliefs are. And when you uncover the truth of who you are, then you're able to process through those challenging emotions. And it's not about not feeling them. It's about moving through them so that you can handle your situation effectively. And that's one of the things that we teach here, because it's crucial so that you can come to a calm, centered place and you can have the strength to hear the really hard things and go through the really challenging conversations, to hear hurtful things from your partner, keep the conversation going so that you can continue to work through them and go down that road. Because like Mark said, if you haven't gone down that road, like if they're talking about it, it means it hasn't yet been resolved, right? You haven't had the right conversations around that.
So I'm not going to answer this last one, but I do want to address it, because this was not even a direction that I considered when I put the outline here together. You know, we have a comment here about someone who is the one that stonewalls. Mm-hmm. And I would say the solutions on that end are very different than if your spouse is stonewalling. You know, like how do you create safety, and how do you create some sense of structure here to be able to open up? I think that might be a good topic for another week. I don't think we have the time to cover that today, but it, you know, I'm glad that the question was asked.
Yeah, I'm glad too. And we kind of alluded to that. You know, I mentioned that Ben is the one that does that. And I've strived to understand where he's coming from. If you just go back to the main principles of the PATH method, though, and you strive to have that perspective for why she's the one that comes guns a-blazing, I like that. I can totally relate to that. And you can understand maybe where she's coming from and have some empathy for her. Then that's going to help her to kind of simmer down and be like, I feel heard. I feel understood. When Ben gives me that gift of understanding and he recognizes, okay, wow, I can see, Heather, you're really upset about this. I can see I've hurt you. That wasn't my intention. You know, and he tries to understand where I'm coming from, then it takes the fire to a low simmer and then eventually we can put it out. So I'm just going to say that little plug there. But yeah, I think going into that in depth in another time would be great. But for now, we're going to go to our marriage mythbuster, which is interesting how it all kind of works out, because we've been talking about affairs and trust in addition to stonewalling, which we didn't really plan on. But this marriage mythbuster is one that I feel is super important and something that's come up a lot as I put out some posts about, can I trust my spouse again? How do I trust my spouse again? In fact, we even have a quiz. Can I trust my spouse again? Is it even possible? And I get a ton of comments and interesting reactions to this, that once trust is broken, it can never be restored. If you have an affair, if you break my trust, that's it. I'm done. It can never be fixed and it's over. And this one really speaks to my heart. So Mark, I want to turn it over to you first and then add in a little bit.
Sure, absolutely. So, I mean, I can get where this idea would come from. I've heard the idea many times from clients or their spouses who have been hurt. The idea that trust can't be restored, I find it interesting, you know, and it likely comes from a sharp contrast between where trust perhaps was before there was a breach and how things feel afterward. You know, when you have that sharp contrast and you're in that moment and it feels so painful and you feel like there isn't any trust in that moment, it can seem like, okay, there isn't any solution. There isn't anything to be done. It may feel like because trust is lost and because an individual is hurting right there in that moment, that it just simply can't be regained. I do feel like that's where a lot of this myth comes from, is people are living really in the moment and they see how things are difficult right now. They don't see any solutions right now. And so it's, you know, I'm just going to be frank, it's much easier to believe that there isn't a solution, because working towards some solutions actually would be difficult. It would involve a lot of being vulnerable, perhaps submitting yourself to the possibility of being hurt again. And so we can start to see where this comes from. You know, it's especially if there are still ongoing breaches of trust. For instance, you know, and quite frequently when we are dealing with affairs, I'll see these cycles where they say, the offending partner says, okay, I'm ending the affair, please trust me. Only for a little bit down the road for there to be another breach in trust and the affair has in fact continued. And so the partner gets into this mode where they say, okay, if I extend trust again, I will be hurt. And so this idea that it can't be restored comes about. Well, other times the idea comes about from saying, okay, well, only time could really build up trust and I just don't want to put in that time. And while time together certainly makes it easier to rebuild trust, this is really only the case when specific actions are taken to build that trust over time. What I'm getting at is most people come to this conclusion because they don't have the tools, they don't know how to rebuild trust, because simply all they felt like their trust was built naturally. When we really break down their actions, there's actually some formulas here that actually build up trust. And I want everyone to think back to when you first met your partner, your husband, your wife, whoever. I imagine, you know, it probably felt really good, but there might not have been a lot of commitment or trust in that relationship. You probably wouldn't have gone on a first date and said, okay, why don't we open up a bank account together? Why don't we tell each other all our deepest, darkest secrets? Probably wasn't the case. If you ever, you know, end up in a dating situation again, you're on a first date and someone is suggesting that, that should be a huge red flag. You should be running from that situation. So anyways, you know, we say, okay, well, you know, it took time to build up trust, but really what happened was certain things were going on to build up that trust. You started extending out your vulnerability a little bit. You gave them a little bit of extra information. You revealed yourself a little bit more, and it was made to be acceptable. It was not only acceptable, but it was rewarding. You were rewarding for opening up, and then trust increases a little bit. Hey, if I can open up a little bit, maybe I can open up a little bit more and a little bit more. Now, that same cycle is needed in rebuilding trust, but we also need some other things to put some patches on this, essentially. You know, and this is going to be would be topics of many other conversations, but essentially, you know, you can put some crutches into the situation. You can add some patches onto the stress if you can add a few things. First off, if you can really set some clear expectations and follow through with those. A lot of times when trust is broken, you know, it's kind of nebulous what's wanted or what we need to feel safe. If you can be clear about that, communicate that and follow through, then this can put one patch on this. If there's a lot of transparency and verification of the person who has offended, meaning they are giving more information than is needed and verifying that that's actually true. Essentially, a lot of this comes down to much more clear, much more open communication. And if you can do that, all those things, and work on extending some trust and vulnerability, and make sure that that vulnerability isn't rewarded, you have a situation that can quickly regain trust.
Yeah, and we've seen this happen with many of our clients that we've worked with, and I can think of them. I'd encourage anyone, if you haven't seen our Restore Trust Masterclass, you can find that on YouTube. I'll put the link here in the Thriving Marriage, and going through different examples of how real couples have been able to restore trust by going through this process. And they do use those, like, quote unquote crutches, like Mark said, for a little while, as is needed to restore the trust, especially in the case of affairs and infidelity. But even with trust with money issues, I mean, we've seen trust with kids, trust with alcoholism, trust with so many different things, promises broken, right? And so how do you restore that? So I'd really encourage you to listen to our full, I mean, we've done workshops on ending affairs and restoring trust, and we have a lot of content out there as well, even on, like I said, on YouTube and here in the podcast. So if you're wondering if trust can be restored, yes. And some people would say it's easier to say, well, it can't be restored.
Did we lose Heather here? I think we might have. Well, we might have lost Heather. It looks like your connection was getting a little janky here. But I'm going to just comment on one of the comments here. Someone talking about how you need to know when enough is enough. Certainly, I would say that's true. You know, it's important to set boundaries. But if we're just talking about restoring trust, then, you know, there are ways to do that. If that's your goal, if you're saying, I want to restore trust in my relationship, well, there are paths for that. So with that, I think we're going to, with Heather being gone, we are running out of time as it was. We'll just wrap up for the day. And I don't know, am I going to get Heather back here? We'll just wrap up. So like I said, like Heather was getting into, if you guys are needing help building up trust, if you're needing help with breaking down that stonewalling behavior, or if you yourself are stonewalling, we certainly have some ability to help you guys out. Heather, I see you're back now.
Oh, yay. Good. I'm glad it's still going. Sorry, I should just drop.
I was just wrapping up here. I was going to say if they need help, you know, you can go to our website, www.highthrivecoaching.com/apply. It's a great way to get in contact with one of our team members, get a free consultation, see if we have any programs that might actually fit your situation.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. I'm sorry. I'm just going to finish my thought because I don't want to have to leave it in my brain all week until next week. All right. So, there's a really great comment here, but I don't have time to go into all of it. So basically, if you're feeling like I just can't forgive, if trust has been broken over and over and over, that's something that's unforgivable. I just can't forgive that. And that's a comment I hear so often. It's unbelievable how many people have that kind of perspective. And you have the right to have that perspective. Everyone has the right to think and feel the way they want to. But I would just encourage you to think about, have I ever broken someone's trust myself? Have I ever made a promise that I didn't keep in my life? Have I ever said I was going to do something and I didn't follow through? Or have I ever told a secret that I wasn't supposed to tell, right? Every single one of us can raise our hand and say that we've broken someone's trust. And that at one point in our lives, we made mistakes or we made intentionally wrong decisions that hurt other people. And we all deserve forgiveness, because if we don't, then we're all condemned to be that way forever. And I understand it's super painful when someone hurts you and breaks your trust. But when you flip it around and say that if you can't forgive them, then that's in turn saying that you don't deserve forgiveness. And that's just something that I personally can't subscribe to. So I believe that all of us deserve forgiveness. We all deserve second chances. And at the same time, I love this comment. I have to go to it. I wasn't going to, but I have to. Understanding that, you know, she says, or he, I'm not sure, people will treat you the way you allow them to. When you notice a pattern of behavior and you continue to allow someone to keep treating you in a manner that breaks down your inner self-reflection, you have to learn to love yourself the way you deserve. And that's, there is a lot of truth to that. You need to work on those internal things inside yourself and recognize that you are good enough. You are worthy. You are capable. You are deserving. You deserve forgiveness. So do other people. When you can gift that to yourself and you find that inner strength and healing within yourself, then you can allow that to have a place in your relationship. Okay. So that was my thought. And I hope that I articulated it correctly. And again, Mark, we appreciate you and all the work that you do here for us. We thank you for listening and encourage you to check out our other masterclasses on YouTube and continue to listen to the podcast.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.